Is in news on the Progressive.
To All Together Now. This is Eleanor LeCain. Women are on the move. We see women rising in elected office and in business. Getting less attention is women rising among working people and labor. Today we'll talk about an exciting new organization, Will Empower, that trains young women to be leaders for working people. The Will Empower Project is based at both Rutgers and Georgetown Universities. It helps build a pipeline of women leaders in the labor movement. Here with us today to talk about it are the two co-directors of the program. First, Cherie Davis-Faulkner, who will be followed in the second segment by Lane Windham. Cherie Davis-Faulkner earned her doctorate in American Studies at Emory University and a master's in women's studies from Ohio State University. She has experience advancing social justice in the arenas of labor, women's rights, and the environment. She is now based at Rutgers University, where she is co-director of Will Empower. Cherie Davis-Faulkner, welcome to All Together Now.
Hi, Eleanor. So glad to be on the show. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Excuse me. I'm wondering if you could just start by, for folks who may not have heard of Will Empower, describe a little bit about what it is and what you do.
So Will Empower is a multi-pronged initiative. It's specifically designed to identify, nurture, and train a new generation of women leaders. And particularly, I think this program is unique in that we are working with folks in public sector and private sector unions, with worker centers, with community-based organizations where worker well-being is central, as well as advocacy organizations and policy institutes. As you said, it is a joint project with Rutgers Center for Innovation and Worker Organization in the School of Management and Labor Relations and Georgetown University's Comanovitz Initiative for Labor and the Working Poor. I think it's also important to say that it's a legacy project of the Burger Marx Foundation. And so the legacy of Burger Marx and the work that they've done to advance the work of young women, of women of color in the labor movement has been significant, and we're proud to be recipients of this support to be able to advance the work that they've been doing for so long, the work that they had invested in for so long. And again, my co-director is Lane Windham, and it's wonderful to always be in the trenches with her.
Right, and we'll be hearing from Lane in a half an hour right after you and I finish having a conversation. So the WILL, we know, stands for Women Innovating Labor Leadership. So the focus is very much on working women leaders. Tell us how you do that. I know part of what you do is you take the young women and you connect them with experienced mentors, right?
Yeah, so the beauty of it is that we've recognized that we need to have multiple points of entry. It's not enough to have a program that is just focused on, say, the leaders who have made it to the top, or just to focus on bringing folks in. But if you look at our website, you'll see that we are trying to, again, make an intervention along the trajectory of women's involvement in working in worker justice. And so we have an apprenticeship program that is focused on recruiting young women who might be right out of college, young rank-and-file workers, and also recognizing that we have folks who just come to getting involved in the workers' movement that might be a little bit more senior, but they're new to this, and we want to be able to provide opportunities for them to be able to work within a variety of different organizations and have a better sense of what the larger worker justice movement is about. We also have cohorts of learning and mentoring. And, you know, the one that I've actually really am closest to in this moment, I've been doing interviews as we are recruiting for the Emerging Leaders Program. And this one, in my mind, I always call it a retention program, right? It's like making sure that we get these dynamic folks who come in and are doing this work. And, you know, maybe 1 or 2 years in, you might be thinking, oh, my gosh, this is so difficult. And we know that when you have, like, a network of folks, when you have a crew, we talk about the importance of having a crew, that you can kind of make it through those challenging moments. You can talk through some of the things that you are dealing with, both in terms of your specific role, but in trying to navigate and understand the landscape that is shifting, right? I mean, we see crisis after crisis, and people have to be able to kind of work through and connect with other people and see things from different perspectives. And we know that if we provide both the mentoring as well as, again, that network or that crew of folks that you can reach out to, that you're more likely to be able to sustain yourself in this work and also see the many ways that you can be engaged in this broader movement. And then we also have the executive leadership cohort of learning. And this one, I think, is just extremely important because you're seeing more women in leadership roles and particularly more women of color in different types of worker formations that have been developed for the purposes of addressing, you know, and working in the gaps and bringing more and more communities into this work. And so we want to make sure that the women who have made it into these elected leadership roles as well as these executive director roles, that they are successful in this work, that they have a broad network, a national network of women to draw upon, to learn from, to share their knowledge with, and that they're able to have a space to be able to work through some of the challenges and be a little bit more vulnerable and not have to have all the answers all the time, and that they're getting the coaching and the support that they need. And so we do think that, you know, the importance of supporting people while they're in the work is there, but there's also sometimes there's that time you need to step back. And so we envisioned a fellowship program that would specifically speak to the need to kind of take an idea, flesh it out, just focus on it and step away maybe from your organization. And we're really excited that we have the new co-director of Jobs with Justice, Erica Smiley, who is the first recipient of our fellowship. And in true Erica Smiley nature, instead of doing the thing we had in mind, which was take a couple of months off and really kind of dig in and do this work, she said, no, I'm going full speed ahead working on this project while also stepping into this new role. And so I think that there's so many ways that we're inspired by the women that we've been engaged with in the conversations that we've been able to have, that we're seeing the program that, you know, on paper was doing one thing, take on new life, we're really enjoying the ride now that we're fully in it.
That's great. Well, it sounds like you're developing a real
kind of full-service organization that helps women both get into becoming leaders for working women and then encourage them midway along the way. They get a fellowship to help get some time to think about ideas or projects they want to work on. And then for those who rise to the executive level within labor, that they have a network that they can go to and share experiences and receive support. So is that basically a good summary of what you do?
That's a wonderful summary, and that's why they pay you the big bucks, right?
Right, exactly, I'm sure. Well, let's take each one of those and go a little bit deeper with it. You talked about yesterday when we first met, you and I on the phone, you had just finished a full day of interviews for these women looking for recruits for these emerging women leaders. What exactly are you looking for, and what kind of women are showing up to become recruits in your program?
So, you know, we thought it was extremely important to have a diversity of roles represented. And so we have people coming out of communications, strategic research, policy work, organizing, of course, but there's also a diversity of organizations, like I said, and so we have a number of younger women who are in their 20s, who, you know, they're just starting out. And then we have some women who came to this a little bit later, who are in their late 30s, early 40s, who might have just gotten into doing worker justice as their work later in life. And I think the thing that's really exciting in having conversations with them is that they're all excited about the ability to talk to the other. What mm-hmm. I really appreciated even today in a couple of my interviews when I asked folks who had more experience how they felt about being in community with women who have, you know, are just a couple of years in, they were like, the next generation is amazing. I'm so excited to be in the same space with them because they have that energy and, you know, they have that that they don't have that feeling that, you know, this can't be done or that can't be done because they haven't necessarily kind of experienced some of the things that I have. And so I'm looking for some of that, right? Mm-hmm. And then vice versa, so many of the younger women were saying, look, I want somebody who can help me think about and navigate, you know, some of the various challenges that are in front of me to give me another perspective to help me not just react quickly, but to understand the long game. And so I think, you know, when we were imagining this initially, there was a sense of really trying to kind of make sure that the peer group was very tight. But what I'm seeing and hearing is that there is a thirst for being able to be engaged across this spectrum. And then there's also the very important piece of having, you know, women who are working in worker centers and with community-based organizations where this is central, but they don't know the labor movement, they don't know unions very well, or they know them to a certain point. And also being able to, like, connect public sector and private sector union workers, staff with the folks who are working in these various formations, and that there is also just an excitement in thinking about the bigger, like having a bigger movement vision and not having it just organized based off of what you experience through the organization that you're in. And so I think when I thought about how many interviews I was doing back-to-back, I was like, oh, this is going to be so challenging. I'm going to be so tired. Mm-hmm. But what I feel is so energized because these folks are leaping up off the page, and the challenges that they're having, some of them are very, very similar. And then there's also a range. And terms of the types of victories that they've been able to have and the learnings that they have. And so I feel like we are privileged to be able to be in these spaces, and it's almost kind of getting the notes from the ground, but through the lens of women and also a significant number of women of color, talking about the, you know, what they are seeing in the field and how we need to be thinking about workers, especially when you center women in the narrative. And so I think with the emerging, particularly in terms of the interviews that I've been having over the last couple of days, it's been inspiring. And I'm really looking forward to the retreats that we're going to have. And so let me tell you a little bit about what we're going to be doing in that program. We have two retreats with the Emerging. It happens over an 8-month time period. We will have online webinars. They will select mentors, as well as have mentoring circles, peer groups that they work with to do peer coaching within their cohort. In addition to doing personal leadership planning, and we do think that the importance of having pathways and understanding pathways to leadership matter. Many of them said that they had not had formal mentor experiences, and that they found it challenging to be able to identify mentors. I know that particularly some of the women of color talked about not being able to have mentors that they felt like could help them navigate the complexities of being a woman of color working in labor. And just the other piece of being able to have a crew, right? Having someone who's not in their organization or has a little bit of a distance, where they can actually let their kind of hair down, their shoulders down, or what have you, and be able to be, have an environment to engage with other women who are doing similar work.
Well, that sounds like a great program for a young person coming up to have all of that support and mentoring. So good for you for doing that. Why do you think it's necessary now to be having programs that encourage women's leadership?
Well, you know, one of the things that I think is extremely important is to recognize that we're seeing many more women in leadership roles, and I think it's important that we bring the resources, that we bring that support, so that we get to a place where it's unremarkable, right?
Right.
And I say that because that really is the goal, right? That it is
right.
Unremarkable that women are leading organizations, particularly organizations that are predominantly women, organizations that are predominantly folks of color, that there is a way that they know that this is a possibility and that they are able to do work in the roles, right, to be able to expand, what's possible, to be able to see transformation in their organizations and be supported in those projects. To be able to be a woman of color leading an organization that might not necessarily be predominantly folks of color or predominantly women, like, we haven't really kind of focused in on the variety of different challenges and needs that women at this level has. I would say that it's important to know that the executive leadership program actually was born out of another program that the Center for Innovation and Worker Organization has called Build the Bench, in which case we brought deputy directors, or the number twos within a number of the worker organization networks. We brought them together to be able to engage and to be a community of learning. And when we looked at the room, it was majority women, and significantly women of color. And so some of what started to happen was seeing that there was a need to be able to have a women-centered space, where the focus was on their leadership as women. And
right.
So this this is what, you know, it comes from nowhere. I think that's the beauty of women strategists, too. It's like, okay, some of this stuff is organic. We see what's happening. We need to create the supports to be able to address these shifts when they are happening. And, you know, this was designed before Me Too and before we started to see this wonderful wave of women. It was almost as if we knew it was coming. And, you know, sometimes the path is laid before you.
Right.
And so I do think that the beauty of it is that my director, Marilyn Snyderman, really, because we are based at a university and the center was in development, had the ability to kind of pivot and take a minute and say, we see energy around this. This is where the innovation is. We're going to invest in this, right? And then, so I do think that there's a way in which being at a college or university does allow you a little bit more flexibility to be able to react to the learnings that are coming out of the programs that we put in place. And so Will Empower for us, particularly as it relates to executive leadership cohort program, is an outgrowth of this Build the Bench program. And, you know, what it does, again, is it creates these cross-organization conversations that we need to be having so that we have a larger movement vision, that we're thinking about the future of workers, and that we're making sure that central to that narrative is women and what women are addressing and dealing with in the workplace, and ways that women are having to really innovate for themselves as things are shifting, to be able to step into these roles and be successful in them. And so I wanted to kind of lift up the things that become possible when you're in different arenas. And because we work with so many of the national unions, because we work with so many of the national, these worker justice movement networks, and are able to kind of tie some of these threads together, it really is, we're creating a space where I feel like something powerful is going to happen.
Right. Well, something powerful is happening. If you look at the labor movement now, you know, it's come so far from where it was 20 years ago, even, that it struck me as odd that we've had half the labor force has been women, but almost all of the leadership in the unions and the labor movement that's been visible to me anyway has been so heavily male. But that is changing dramatically. We now have a woman as the secretary treasurer of the AFL-CIO. We have many women presidents and heads of the unions. So women are really on the move. What do you think is happening there? Like, what do you think the block was before to having women in leadership in the union movement and the labor movement broadly? And what do you think is happening now that women are emerging to higher levels of leadership?
You know, I think one of the things, when I think about the women that I know who have been doing this work, you know, for decades, one of the things that I know is that some people played the inside game and some people played the outside game, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that meant that, you know, pushing the boundaries, you know, I think about my mentor, the person who really kind of talked to me first when I was in Ohio, was a woman named Petey Talley, and she's now the state Fed president in Ohio. But when I was a student there, she just, you know, she grabbed me and she started kind of talking to me at a very early space, and she showed me that this, you know, that it was possible to be able to kind of push through and do some of this work internally, to be seen, right? To stay there and be seen. But there are some folks who have said, you know, I'm not able to do some of the work internally that I want to be able to do, and so I'm going to create the types of organizations that will speak to the communities that are oftentimes not covered, right, by the National Labor Relations Act. And so I'm on the board of the National Black Workers Center Project. I think about, one of our advisory council members is Tanya Wallace Goldburn. She's also been part of Build the Bench as well, but she is the executive director and trying to build this national network. But in so many ways, these Black Worker Centers have really been speaking to communities that didn't necessarily feel like they were being seen.
I want to ask you about that. You talk about when you were a student in Ohio that a woman helped you do some work internally about being seen. Talk a little bit about that, because I see that happening with a lot of women who come to me for advice on campaigns and thinking of running for office. And so many of these women face this issue of they want to contribute, they want to serve, but there's something inside of them that wants to hide and kind of make themselves invisible. And it sounds like you might have had a little bit of this. What was that like for you, and what helped you shift into the willingness to be seen, and how did you do it?
You know, I actually come out of women's studies. I was at Ohio State to get my master's degree in women's studies, and I honestly, even though I come from a labor family, I did not really understand labor. And when I got involved with a major strike on our campus, Petey Talley was the person who helped me to understand what was going on. And her being a Black woman mattered for me to be able to say, I see these Black women who are in these positions making this low amount of money, and that there's a hierarchy even within the campus workers. She's the person who kind of connected me initially before I went to work at the AFL-CIO in D.C., but that was my grounding, and I think part of it was honestly just seeing her do what she did, having her explain to me, about the labor movement, and knowing that when I think about the labor movement, like, that there are particular women that I can chart, that I see who have been in these very strategic positions and didn't just get to the position and say, I'm here. They used their time in that position to be able to push and hire more women and more people of color, and to bring these voices to the table, so that, when you bring these voices and they bring these communities and these other narratives to the table, it shifts the kinds of conversations that we can have. And so I just feel like some of it, the being seen part was, I did not think about labor except for as a way to concretely be able to impact women's lives. I felt like this was my women's studies, right? Like if I really wanted to make a difference, I needed to go and get involved with. And honestly, I've had the privilege of only ever working for women, and largely they've been all women of color. And so the things that I've learned and the way that I've learned to do this work has been guided by these amazing both mentors and guides who've been women and women of color.
Well, that's great that you've had women as mentors for you, and now you've got this whole program you're helping to run to help so many more women have those mentors. Talk a little bit about your long-term vision. When the Will Empower Project is fully in bloom and wildly successful, what changes can we expect to see in the world?
Well, I think even the way that we talk about workers and the types of issues that workers are dealing with, that narrative will shift significantly. I think that we will have an intergenerational network, and that there will be a way that people are connecting professionally, but that we'll also see that that folks are kind of charting new courses, that you're actually seeing remedies to issues that folks are are having, that women are having on the ground, that workers are having on the ground, that there'll be a way that we even talk about economic justice that shifts significantly, that we won't, that climate justice will be a part of that conversation more fully, that racial justice will be a part of that conversation more fully, that women and gender justice will be a part of that conversation more fully, that we will make sure that it is a place where we're thinking about the ways that we lift folks up significantly from all communities, and that we know that there will be, you know, the leadership will represent what these communities and what the memberships look like, and it, again, will be unremarkable. It'll be the way that it's supposed to be.
That's a great vision, and we're just about out of time, but very briefly, how can people learn more about the Will Empower program? Do they have a website?
Yes, please go to our website. It is willempower.labor@gmail.com is our email address, and willempower.org is the website.
Fantastic. That's all the time we have. Cherie Davis-Faulkner, thank you so much for being with us on All Together Now.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to talk with you, Eleanor. Have a great day.
Thank you. Listeners, stay tuned for our next guest. The other co-director of Will Empower is Lane Windham. She'll be with us, along with one of the young women placed in an apprenticeship in labor, Aaliyah Todd, who's been working with the AFL-CIO in North Carolina. Lane Windham, welcome to All Together Now.
Hi, Eleanor.